Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have an author and someone who's got many, many things she's doing. Kiran Chaturvedi, welcome to the show.
Thank you and good morning. I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. Kiran has a writing group and a publishing startup which is called Write and Beyond. And she has an academic background in sociology and social work. Kiran, tell me a little bit about your early career and maybe some of your learnings.
I started in social research and then I moved to market research. And there was a bit of, before that, I was very academically oriented. So the usual IAS karna hai, and I did take the exam and I reached the UPSC board, and it was 3 days before my wedding. And later on, I mean, I didn't make it to the main UPSC list, but then we got a letter which was an interview for the RAW, the research and analysis wing.
And that would have been an exciting career.
Yes, so I had just kind of taken the exam, not very sure what I was doing. And then I got this call. So it was very exciting because my relatives in Punjab and everybody got the IB, does a back check and everything. So it was very exciting. And I went for the interview. We were posted elsewhere. And I went for the interview. And then I got to know that they don't take married women. I mean, I'm sure today they do, but it was like, no, because your husband's in the corporate sector and the postings will be difficult and stuff. So kind of they hinted, we didn't realize this, that where you're posted, what your husband does. And because when I'd applied, I was not married. So anyway, that was a funny thing. And of course, I never went back to it, but I always remember what if. So and then market research happened, and the learning was that stick to what you really like to do.
Correct.
And then you enjoy
your
work.
So Kiran, when I was reading about you, you have in your bio written that you step back to realize your core values and needs.
Sounds.
I'd love to understand what this means.
So like I said, the do what you like. So my work was entirely up to my liking and my capabilities also, because I have this, I think it's inbuilt and then trained also, the sociological lens and way of looking at things. But after a point, I realized in a corporate career, it isn't so much those things which matter. It is more the targets, the corporate vision, the brands, and, you know, dealing with clients and all of that, which was somewhere taking me away from what my core strengths and even what I like to do. So the enjoyments, till you're actually doing work in the field, it's good. And then I was, do I really want to do this, you know, chasing targets, the time is here, commuting, there's a lot of travel, and as your role grows, there's international travel.
Correct.
So while the work is still fun, there's a whole lot of it, but just taking away from the fun, and I had to take that call, and also there were children, and there were health issues, and I was like, I'm really not enjoying if I'm spending 4 hours in a day commuting and rushing between meetings. And meal times are going haywire. Is this what I want to do with my life? Okay, I get paid. But do I really even need that money? Given the kind of person I am, I don't have these ambitions of, you know, keep increasing what I have. And I'm content very easily. So then why am I doing it?
Correct.
So that's what I meant.
Okay, wonderful. So let's move on and let's talk about your current passion, which is Write and Beyond. Tell me about this initiative.
So once I was clear that I don't have to chase a corporate career, I took a backseat. But I'm a very restless, creative sort of person. So I cannot sit at home and watch TV, though I tried stock trading. And I thought that will keep me, but that's just like 3 hours. And how much ever you read. And again, I realize it's fun because if I make a good choice, I feel very good that, okay, I you know, did it well. I studied it well. But after that, I lose interest. So I did that for a few years. And then, of course, the market slumped very badly. There was all of that.
Correct.
And I also have a huge nature connect. So I started working on that. So during that period, I really, because we had moved to Gurgaon, it was a new place. So I started getting to know people. And I realized if we have to live here now, I better get into a community.
Correct.
And that's how, by going out, volunteering with women's business organizations and all, I got in touch with her. I just happened to meet her, and on the spot, she had moved to Gurgaon. She had been doing online coaching, writing coaching. We were talking, and I was talking about training, and I said, maybe I should start something for training in creative ideation, because I've been doing so much of it in my past career. And now I've seen so much else, and I know what people, it would be a nice combination. She said, yeah, writing would fit into it. I said, absolutely, writing would fit into it so well. So that's how we started the Wonderful. Writing group, because it's community focused. Right. It's helping very early stage aspiring writers right. who haven't really found the voice and the confidence. Mm. And even why should I write? Even that question lingers. So it started with that.
So you're actually fulfilling everyone's dream of that I everyone has a story
so.
Inside.
I them. Hope so. Pretty much like what you are actually doing, but differently. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question on writing. And I often wondered, you know, I also write a lot, yes. you must be writing a lot. What makes a good writer and what makes a good story?
I think a good writer, of course, there's two parts to it. One is, what are you going to say?
Correct.
So having a lot of clarity and being able to say it with honesty. Mm-hmm. And the other is the craft, yeah. You know, really knowing, because it is an art form at the end of the day. So how do you craft that story that you have? And that takes a lot of practice. Mm-hmm. And in fact, having the clarity and the honesty to say it also takes a lot of practice, work, self-work. Sure. So I think both things, okay. internal and external.
Okay. And what makes a good story?
The reader should want to know what next. He should care. She should
flip
really,
the pages.
Yes, turn the pages. Absolutely. You cannot get them the same. Oh, boring hai, kal padenge.
And what are you more partial to, fiction or
non-fiction? I love non-fiction. Like I said, sociological lens. Yeah. I love non-fiction also because I find it easier. Mm-hmm. Fiction is extremely, though I write fiction, I write poetry as well, but they are like, I find them extremely real. People who can just keep doing fiction and non-fiction, mm-hmm. I really think they are another class.
So tell me, you know, you say that, you know, you got home, you've got a busy life. When you write, do you have a schedule?
No. I'm a very non-planner. I mean, I plan in my mind, mm. but in terms of schedules, I'm not that I'll stick to 6 baje utke hi karna hai. I have friends who are very much like that. 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. they are writing. I'm not like
you know, that's very interesting. I've been asked the same question many times. And I said, when I'm in the frame of writing, then I sometimes wake up at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Go and sit and write for 4 hours, and by the time my wife wakes up, I would have written 2,500 words. Mm-hmm. There are other days for weeks I don't write
yes,
at all.
Yes, so I am very easy with like that. See, again, it's I can afford to do it. The mm-hmm. friends who are writing very regularly, I know that's their life.
Yeah.
For me, it's a passion, mm-hmm. but I'm not driven by right. it in the sense that nahin, I have to achieve something yeah. daily. I write daily, mm-hmm. but I write for myself.
Wonderful.
So Wonderful. I don't have a schedule.
Wonderful. So tell me now, you know, you said that you are helping a lot of first-time authors.
Absolutely.
One of the big challenges a lot of first-time authors face is how do they get published?
Well, I'm sorry, but that's not where we are helping. So we are okay. not helping them publish, though we are a startup. So if there's a good manuscript or a writer with potential, then we do nurture them and say, we'll publish.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's the thing. We mm. can publish mm. or we can tell them where they should submit, even for first pieces. You mm. know, people are very hesitant. Mm. So that, and we are starting a magazine, which okay. would again help. Mm. But we are more like guiding them. Mm. And of course, if we like a manuscript, then we can publish.
And it. Your thoughts on self-publishing?
Excellent. I think it's given so much options for people mm. to. The problem with self-publishing is that you should know what it will give you. It may not necessarily do all the things you imagine it will do.
Correct.
But at least you get the book in
yeah.
hand.
Yeah.
It's definitely a boost.
In fact, and I find the biggest problem with self-publishing is that it doesn't reach bookshelves.
Exactly. People mix up the two, that self-publishing is just like going to a big yeah. publisher. It is not.
Yeah.
So once you
I
understand
agree.
That,
I agree.
It's okay.
And, you know, my next question is, that generally I'm sensing that reading is not happening as much as it used to. Now, maybe
I'm
40, you know, 63 years old, 40 years of work. I used to read a lot.
Mm.
But tell me, aren't millennials reading books or is visual and audio more
See,
relevant?
There is definitely more visual and audio. That is, we can all see that. Mm. But even when we were young, I mean, I was very small when TV came to India. And fact that TV came didn't take away from our reading. Mm. So I think if you have it in you to read, you will read. You may read on your phone.
Mm.
You may read different kinds
Correct.
Of things.
Correct.
But I don't see my children, at least they read.
Mm.
They read whatever they like. And my friends and I'm in a writing group for mm. the last 6 years. And I've been in book clubs. Book clubs are sprouting everywhere. Mm. People attend so regularly. Books are discussed. So I don't think reading is going away. Maybe it's the form in which you read. Also, visual is also a story at the end of the day. So we shouldn't confuse, I think, this whole thing of the actual words written on a piece of paper or a screen. As long as there is a story, to me, that's more important.
That's very well said. So let me move to the next part. And again, you said that you have a home in the Himalayas, which you made into a homestay.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about this.
So again, like that phase when we just moved to Gurgaon and I had some health issues with my children. So that's one of the other reasons why I opted out a full-term career. And then I realized, what do I really, when I used to commute in Bombay, what did I think of? I was like, the day I have my cottage, I'm going to stop this. Mm-hmm. And I said, now that I've already stopped it, now where is the cottage? Mm-hmm. So I was exploring, and being in Delhi, it's easier to go up and, you know, check places. So yeah, it was always that, again, it can't be a place where there's already a lot of crowd. So it's a remote place, it's a village, it's unknown, you wouldn't have heard. It's in Garhwal.
Okay.
It's near the highway to Joshimath. So it's, there are two rivers, Alaknanda and Mandakini. Mm-hmm. They form like two arms of a Y, and there's a whole range in the center. So Kedarnath is here, Badrinath is here.
Correct.
Now this whole range, which is in between, right on the ridge in the center of that, is a little village, and that's where I found this. Mm-hmm. And thanks to the internet, the people talk to you. There's this girl who lives abroad, but is from there, and we were on a, I trek and I go into the hills a lot, I travel a lot, so it was on one such forums, and we were talking that Kumaon was so crowded. She said, why didn't you come to my village and see if you're really keen on something remote, completely unknown? And I went there and said, yeah, this is what I'm looking for.
So tell me, what are the joys and challenges of opening up your home to a stranger?
Oh, that's a whole book in itself.
I'm sure.
So there's a lot of, see, it wasn't started as a homestay. I made a little retreat for myself. And then my friends who came said that, my God, this is, nothing like this exists, so why don't you open it to people? I did that. Earlier, first 2 years, it was just friends and, friends of friends. So it was all good. And then it was like, okay, put it on this Airbnb and everything. So the challenges come from there because you don't know who's coming.
Yeah.
The joy is that anybody who selects to come to such a place, 99% of the time is going to be someone looking for a different
experience
and open to whatever comes with it, because it's not all a bed of roses. It has its challenges, even being in such a place.
Sure.
The problem is when the wrong match happens, and which now that I'm not personally vetting who comes, can happen, which is still very rare. But when it happens, it's extremely horrible because you have to deal with the, it's not a resort, it's a house in a village. So the caretaker is a villager. They have their own pride and their own way of dealing. He has no idea what hospitality and service to a customer means.
Yeah.
And these people have no idea what it means to treat a villager with dignity. So when those kind of clashes happen, and then there's some basic unawareness that, you know, water is a problem in the hills. You don't waste it. If the wind is howling, it's not like a hurricane is coming and you are in danger. Or if it's night, and there are no street lights concept. Yeah. And if you're stepping out, you should be aware. So all those kind of things, which is mostly because of the unawareness. People think they have a car, they can travel. It's not just like that. So there's a lot of that. And of course, our challenge is because managing it remote, you do want to, you claim a certain thing. You do want to maintain that. Sometimes it's not possible.
So on a lighter note, in your small little venture in tourism, you're beginning to see the ugly Indian traveler?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Very recently, in fact. It was very interesting. But like I said, those are very long stories. So,
Without giving names, any story, an unpleasant story that you want to share with us?
Well, I think there are maybe five totally in 7 years of running it.
Right.
But one I'd like to talk here about is because this was a group of women, and they are themselves owners. One of them is the owner of a very, very super luxury spa in North India. I don't know why she wanted to come to such a offbeat place, first of all. And I kept telling her, and they came through somebody, and I kept telling her, it's not what you are running. If you're thinking hospitality, it's not like, you know, your 7-star spa. It's a tiny is not the word for it. It's really small, and it's in a small village, and it's basic. It's comfortable, but it's No, we are going on Tirath and we will come, and it's because of that person who kind of she knew and I knew. And then it was a problem from the word go. They didn't listen to anything. I'm like, please reach before sunset. You won't have, and I kind of sense that they won't have been to such a remote wilderness. It's a wilderness. There are reserve forests on both sides.
Sure.
So I said, you cannot. They came after dark. Then they were scared of the way because it's really deep Himalayas. So it's a scary way if you're not used to it. There are wild animals. The minute I told her, please don't stop your car now that it's dark and don't get out of the car. Why? Because there are wild animals. And, you know, it may, nothing will happen. But even if you sight one, you're going to be terrified. And I don't want you to have such a scary experience even before you arrive. That scared her even more. But then when she reached, it was, they had traveled with 20 bags or something. I don't know why. And then, you know, they expect the caretaker to be like a coolie, and it's a pahadi rasta. Woh kitni baar jayega, aayega, ek raat ke liye aapko rukna hai. I mean, it was endless. Then it was like, you haven't prepared this, you haven't prepared. We've got a khana. Fine, you've got your khana. We'll heat it. Okay, heat it. Woh raste mein liya hoga, bach ke hoga. Then next day, hame refund do, humne to khana hi nahi khaya. I mean, it was endless. And I was like, what is this?
You know, and people have to adjust their expectations.
Yes, and the contrast of who they are and the way they were behaving, I was like, yeah, like you said, ugly Indian, not just traveler, just ugly Indian.
So, Kiran, let's move on. I mean, you know, another thing that you are passionate about is management of waste.
Yes, yes,
absolutely. I know my wife is very passionate about recycling, and you know, there's not a single piece of paper that gets out, and she makes her own fertilizer and does everything. What are your thoughts on how do we manage waste in our lives?
Exactly what you said, what your wife is doing. And I think it's also very important to be very conscious consumers, you know, reduce, recycle, reuse. I think the whole way we produce and use things and live needs a serious questioning.
Correct.
In fact, I don't know, when Laburnum started this whole waste thing, that's when I was involved because we were already running within the game. So I don't know who your wife is. Okay. If I know her, I have no idea, but probably yes, because that whole team came. Yeah. And,
So let me move on now we go back a little earlier in the conversation. You spoke about raw. And how they wouldn't take a married woman. And my question to you is on gender balance. You know, over the years, you know, everyone in India is now talking of gender balance and how important it is to make sure that half the population has exactly the same rights at work, etc. What are your thoughts on gender balance, and how do we make sure that this gets adopted much faster?
So my thoughts might be a little off the mainstream, because like I mentioned to you, when I started getting involved with community, I was working with this BD Foundation, and they work on diversity and inclusion and upskilling women and training women to stay in the workforce. And I had just left the organized workforce, and I knew my challenges, and it's been almost 14 or 12 years since I left full-time, even flexi-time work. And what I've seen is nothing has changed in terms of the basic reason why we say that it narrows down, you know, the pipeline as the women go, and it's a leaking pipeline. Why is it a leaking pipeline? Nobody is addressing childcare. And I think that's the biggest reason. And there cannot be any gender balance till the gender roles are not balanced. Until there is not a societal, systemic, structural support for something as basic as childcare. And I think I've attended so many conferences, and now I just completely, you know, disengage from this topic for this reason. Okay. That what are you talking about when you're not talking of the core thing?
And you said the core is to make sure that
there is childcare, because, you know, a lot of people are not going to opt out of having children. And then how does it just become the women's job?
Correct.
There is no parental leave that the father can also stay at home. In the morning, you are dependent on maids. If your maid has taken the weekend off, or she's gone to a gown, she doesn't turn up. We are not talking of these things. We're just talking, oh, be motivated, oh, have a mentor. How does it bloody help me? I'm sorry. But when in the morning my maid hasn't turned up, and I have a flight to catch, and my baby is sleeping, can I leave the house, lock the house with a sleeping baby? If I don't have parents-in-law, parents. So we are always standing on somebody's shoulder. All the talk of emancipation is rubbish, because you're not, you are still hobbling the woman. It's her business. How many husbands or partners or, you know, co-parents are going to actually interview a nanny even with you? or that you are touring, fine, I'll handle the nanny is not turned up, I'll hire a new nanny, I'll keep all of that. And there isn't any structural, I mean, childcare. How many offices have childcare? So it's very discriminatory because you can't just talk of some elite companies having a childcare for those highly qualified women who they are paying millions of bucks because they are earning the company trillions of bucks. That's not, you know, and all the talk and all the action is happening in that field. So I find it all very fake.
I think great points, great points. So let's move on. A few questions for you personally. Over the years, have you had any people who've had a strong influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
See, I'm a person who doesn't believe in idols as such. What I've seen very early in life is all idols have feet of clay.
Correct.
You have to really become self-aware and learn from everything, every person. Of course, initially it's your parents, then it's your friends, it's your teachers. A lot of my teachers have really, really influenced me. They have seen in me things that I wasn't aware of and they've nurtured it. Parents have, of course, always given, you know, me that kind of freedom that you have a right to do whatever you think is right and we are not going to impose.
Correct.
So those things have kind of made me, and I think, and I read, so this, of course, everything, I think, from everywhere. And I learn from people around me, real life, I'm more into that. I could learn from my neighbor. I just observe everything and everything is a lesson.
Wonderful. So Kiran, what would be three words that define you?
I'm very patient, I think I'm very creative, and I'm empathetic.
Okay.
I would say that.
Okay, well said, well said. Next question to you would be, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
Oh, okay, I'm always doing crazy things that I know nothing about. So I think the latest, there are two very different things. One is, of course, I'm trying to grow avocados.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
In your village up there?
No, here. They won't grow. That's very cold climate.
Okay. I don't know much about growing.
Yeah, so this is a tropical fruit. Okay. It's from South America and California. Yeah. So I'm trying here in Gurgaon, hopefully.
Okay.
I tried last year. So that was a new thing. Now I'm trying again. That wasn't very successful because we got the season wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a very new, because today only I was cleaning up the seed again and saying, okay, start karna. So the other thing is, of course, we do a reader's festival. So you have literary festivals, but we are not calling it that. And we've just got a very big tie-up. So this is our second edition. We did one last year, which was very, like, I do everything on a very small human scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you were talking, we never think of monetizing models because, like, let's do the thing.
Yep.
We are not doing it for that. Thankfully, everything is okay. We are managing.
Correct.
But now we are. So that's a new thing because at that scale, with that visibility, it's a first for me to be organizing something from right and beyond.
Well, good luck. Good luck.
Thank you.
So my next, we have two more questions for you now. My next question to you is on failure. You know, and the reason I ask this from every guest is I've got a new book I'm working on failure.
Oh, excellent.
But in India particularly, I think in Asia all in general, we don't teach children that it's okay to fail.
It's very shameful, no? That's what you're taught, yeah.
And that is why it manifests itself all the time because we're always taught first aana hai, sabse aage rehna, kuch bhi ho jaye, line se aage pahunch jao, you know, etc., etc.
So,
what are your thoughts? That's point number one. And point number two is that what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes?
I think I'm a case study in failure.
We all are.
Say so.
We all are.
Because, you know, whatever was expected of me, I didn't do. It was always like, you know, within a class, like a girl who's going to like shine always in. I think I'm okay, but whatever was expected, I didn't shine in those ways. So I always moved away. Just say it would reach somewhere, I would take a detour and go off. So in some ways that could be considered a failure. But another thing I noticed was that they always lift you up. Like you're saying, first to first, are you a star? Are you a fail? Why do you do that? That one is not ambitious. What kind of friends do you have? So I never understood why are they being treated as failures. They are as good people as, you know, and just getting a certain achievement because you have some inborn skill or some ability, how is that making you different?
Yeah.
You know, finally in life, everybody's going to cope with similar things and struggle and find out their own way. So I think we over-fetishize this whole thing of success versus failure. So that's my idea. You said, what is failure? And what have I learned from my own mistakes is, that you learn from them. You really self-analyze. You become more self-aware and you train. You identify. So, of course, you should be shy of facing the truth.
Correct.
And then that's the only way you'll move on. Otherwise, you'll repeat it or you'll not even see and you'll lead others into similar mistakes. And that's also important as you grow up because you do become a leader in a very different sense from how the word is again used. But you are a leader in your life and people's actions and choices are going to depend so much on what you know.
Correct.
So it's important to learn and be aware.
Yeah. So my final question to you, do you have any regrets? You know, life well lived other than raw?
I don't know, regrets. I'm not a person who sits with regrets, but I take it as learning. Like you said, regrets are more about where I couldn't do something. So two things. One is where I have not stuck to my core beliefs. I definitely regret that. And I see it as a mistake. If I had, who knows where it would have left. But sometimes you compromise on those, what you know inside of you. You don't listen. Or you listen, you know, and yet you compromise.
Correct.
And I think there's definitely regret about that. You should have the strength to say, no, I'm sticking to this. So that kind of regret. Yes. That's the biggest regret.
Wonderful. So Kiran, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you and I wish you lots of success.
It's been a privilege. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.